In this presentation, we go to the very heart of Christian prayer. We're sharing in Jesus' prayer. Jesus is praying to his Father in us. God is drawing everyone into divine communion, and prayer is our response. As St. Augustine says, "You've made us for yourself, O God. Our hearts are restless till they rest in you." God's communication with us are communications of love. They engage, as we saw in the previous presentation, they engage our longing for communion. God has been pouring God's Spirit of love out upon the world since the beginning of time, in every culture and to every person. And there have always been those who've listened and responded. Tragically, God's self-communication is often not heard or is distorted. We thank God for Jesus, who listened and responded with all his mind and heart and soul and strength. He became for us God's focal word, making sense of and giving perspective to and perfecting all the many ways in which people of every culture have heard and responded to God's self-communication. In the prologue to John's Gospel we read, "All things came into being through God's word, and without the word not one thing came into being. The word became flesh and lived among us. And we've seen his glory, the glory as of a Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." And John goes on, "From his fullness we have all received grace upon grace. No one's ever seen God. It's the only Son who is in the bosom of the Father, who has made God known." In the bosom of the Father, in that intimate loving, and that is made God known. The Spirit of God is always being poured out in the world, in every culture, in every person. Jesus' disciples looked on Jesus, his heart pierced on the cross, and they opened their hearts to his response to God and to us, a response of love. They experienced the Spirit of love that unites Jesus to the God he calls Abba. It's this Spirit that brought healing and meaning to people in a way that transcended any previous religious experience. And they found that the same was true for those of the non-Jewish world who opened their hearts to Jesus in the same way. In the words of the Second Vatican Council, "All are called to union with Christ, who is the light of the world, from whom we go forth, through whom we live, and towards whom our whole life is directed." It's our Christian belief that the risen Jesus in eternal communion with the Father, is also in communion with us. As Jesus says in John 15, "If you love me, my Father will love you, and we will come to you and make our home in you." When we enter into prayer, therefore, we are responding to God's word of love, and we're not alone. Jesus is with us. He draws us to himself and takes us with him to the Father. As we read in John 12, "When I'm lifted up from the earth, I'll draw everyone to myself." Jesus not only shows us the way to God, he is the way. For it is our communion in love with him that opens us to God's love and draws us into God's embrace. In Paul's words, Jesus is the yes to all that God has promised. Jesus reveals God's faithful love to us by being himself an expression of it. Jesus is the way because he is the perfect human expression of God's word. And it's only by responding to God's word that we can be in communion with God. John 14, "No one can come to the Father except through me." In his book, One with Jesus, Paul de Jager, a Jesuit, speaks of having a loving docility to the guest in one's heart. He warns against having too great a preoccupation with ourselves, and he counsels us to keep our eyes on Jesus. He reminds us that it's not a matter of imitating Jesus from the outside, as it were, but rather of allowing grace to transform us. Paul could say, "It's no longer I who live, it's Christ who lives in me. And the life I live now, I live by the faith of the Son of God, loving me and giving himself for me." Those beautiful words are found in Paul's, probably his first letter, the letter to the Galatians, chapter 2. So I'll read to you a little piece from Paul de Jager. "Formerly," he writes, "we encouraged ourselves in the practice of higher virtues by an imitation of Jesus, which I may well describe as an imitation from the outside. Jesus was our model, but outside us, a model whose divine virtues we strove to reproduce somewhat after the fashion of a painter who copies his subject. Imitation after this fashion appears somewhat cold and dull. But now Jesus means something very different for us. To imitate Jesus is no longer to copy Jesus, but to be transformed into Jesus, to become Jesus. It's no longer to bring out in ourselves the features of the beloved model, but to allow Christ to develop and reproduce himself in us. It's imitation from within. There's no question of merely becoming like Jesus, but of becoming one with Jesus. We're invited to keep our eyes fixed on the ways in which God has chosen to reveal God's presence and God's activity in Jesus, in his words and actions, and in our real history. Paul writes in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, all of us, with unveiled faces, seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror. Jesus is the mirror reflecting God's glory. All of us with unveiled faces seeing the glory of the Lord as though reflected in a mirror. We are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord, the Spirit. And in Romans chapter 8, the Spirit, says Paul, helps us in our weakness. For we don't know how to pray as we ought, but that very Spirit intercedes with sighs too deep for words. And God, who searches the heart, knows what is the mind of Jesus, of the Spirit, because the Spirit intercedes for the saints according to the will of God. The Spirit, that is, the love communion that Jesus offers to God and God offers to Jesus. That communion in love. In that same letter, 2 Corinthians chapter 2, Paul uses a beautiful expression. He says, we are the aroma of Christ. And Augustine writes in his discourse on Psalm 140, when a prayer is sincerely uttered by a faithful heart, it rises as incense rises from a sacred altar. There's no scent more fragrant than that of the Lord. All who believe must possess this perfume. And St. John Henry Newman, dear Jesus, he prays, help me spread your fragrance everywhere I go. Flood me with your Spirit and life. Penetrate and possess my being so utterly that all my life may be only a radiance of yours. Shine through me and be so in me that every person I come in contact with may feel your presence in my soul. I'd like to read that again. A prayer from John Henry Newman. Dear Jesus, help me spread your fragrance everywhere I go. Flood me with your Spirit and life. Penetrate and possess my being so utterly that all my life may be only a radiance of yours. Shine through me and be so in me that every person I come in contact with may feel your presence in my soul. James Macaulay, perhaps Australia's greatest lyric poet, in a poem called Letter to John Dryden, writes, incarnate word, in whom all nature lives. Cast flame upon the earth, raise up contemplatives among us, who walk within the fire of ceaseless prayer, impetuous desire. Set pools of silence in this thirsty land. Distracted men that sow their hopes in sand will sometimes feel an evanescent sense of questioning they do not know from whence. Prayer has an influence we cannot mark. It works unseen, like radium in the dark. And Teilhard de Chardin, in his Mass upon the Altar of the World, writes, "Christ of glory, hidden power stirring in the heart of matter, glowing centre in which the unnumbered strands of the manifold are knit together, strength inexorable as the world and warm as life. You whose brow is of snow, whose eyes are of fire, whose feet are more dazzling than gold poured from the furnace, you whose hands hold captive the stars, you the first and the last, the living, the dead, the reborn, you who gather up into your superabundant oneness every delight, every taste, every energy, every phase of existence, to you my being cries out with a longing as vast as the universe, for you indeed are my Lord and my God." Prayer, then, is the experience of yielding to a mysterious drawing into our own heart and into the heart of creation. We are responding to an invitation to enter more deeply into communion with God. Christian prayer is experienced as a sharing in Jesus' prayer. It's essential, therefore, that we get to know Jesus ever more deeply. And the way to do this is to immerse ourselves in the Gospels, where we can watch Jesus relating and listen to his teaching. Nothing can replace such a practice. As we get to know Jesus more, this Gospel meditating will become simpler, but we never outgrow it, for it is Jesus who best reveals God to us and best reveals us to ourselves. Some people find it easier to enter imaginatively into a gospel scene than others. But many are surprised to find that with persistence, they're able to use their imagination better than they at first thought. And that by using their imagination in this way, they find that they are less bound into thoughts and more engaged at the level of the heart. Perhaps the way of praying is best explained by an example. So if you'd like to close your eyes, maybe, and allow me to guide you through the scene in John chapter 5, the man at Bethesda. I'm adapting this from Anthony de Mello's Sadhana. So imagine the pool, the five covered walkways, surroundings. What kind of place is it? Is it clean or is it dirty? Large or small? Notice the architecture. The weather. Now let this whole scene come to life. See the people near the pool. How many people do you see? What sort of people? How are they dressed? What are they doing? What kind of illness are they suffering from? What are they saying? What are they doing? It's not enough for you to observe the whole scene from the outside, as if it were a movie or on a screen. You must participate in it. So what are you doing there? Why have you come to this place? What are your feelings as you survey the scene and watch these people? What are you doing? Do you speak to anyone? Who are you speaking to? Now notice the sick man of whom the gospel passage speaks. Where in the crowd is he? How is he dressed? Is there anyone with him? Walk up to him and speak with him. What do you say to him? What is his reply? Spend some time getting as many details of his life and his person as he shares with you. What sort of an impression does he make on you? What are your feelings while you converse with him? As you are speaking with him, you notice out of the corner of your eye that Jesus has entered this place. Watch all Jesus' actions and movements. Where does he go? How does he act? What do you think Jesus is feeling? He's now coming towards you and the sick man. What are you feeling now? You step aside when you realize he wants to talk to the sick man. What is Jesus saying to him? And what does the man answer? Listen to the whole dialogue. Fill in the sketchy account of the gospel. Dwell especially on Jesus' question to him, "Do you want to be made well?" Now listen to Jesus' command as he tells the man to get up and walk. The first reaction of the man, his attempt to get up, the miracle. Notice the reaction of the man. Notice Jesus' reaction. And your own. Jesus now turns to you. He engages you in conversation. Talk to him about the miracle that has just taken place. Is there any sickness that you are suffering from? Physical, emotional, spiritual? Speak to Jesus about it. What does Jesus have to say? Listen to his words to you. Do you want to be made well? Do you really mean what you say when you ask to be cured? Are you ready to take all the consequences of a cure? You've now arrived at a moment of grace. Do you have the faith that Jesus can cure you? That he means to cure you? Do you have the trust that this will happen as a result of the faith of the whole group here? Listen to his mighty words as he pronounces the words of healing over you and lays his hands on you. What are you feeling? Are you certain that these words you've heard are going to have an effect on you? In fact, have already had their effect on you, even though you may perceive nothing tangible at the moment. Spend a while now in quiet prayer in the company of Jesus. So let's come back now to our presentation. That was just a simple example of a way of meditating, of looking at a gospel scene and entering into it. For the gospel scenes that are recorded are there precisely because they have something to say to everyone. They're symbolic of all our experiences. Every person in the gospel is a part of us, of me. A simple variant on this form of imaginative prayer